Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, we talked about an effort to help both Wisconsin growers and also food entrepreneurs be more competitive in the retail and even food service landscape. Our next guest doesn't exactly fit that model of food entrepreneur, but his story is a remarkable Wisconsin story of dairy success. If there is a typical road to ice cream success, Jeff Miller is perhaps not the owner of that typical story. He did not graduate from the dairy science program at Madison, say, and he's not even a Wisconsin native. What he is a Minnesota native who pursued a career in international law and was living with his partner in London before making a sudden radical career shift, buying West's Dairy and Ice Cream in Hayward in 2005, and buying and renovating a bed and breakfast there simultaneously. The story of Miller's first year as a dairyman and B&B owner is recounted in a new memoir called Scoop, Notes from a Small Ice Cream Shop. I spoke with Jeff Miller last week in front of an audience at Milwaukee's Purple Door Ice Cream, and I asked him whether ice cream was the key reason he decided to move back to the Midwest or whether it was just a convenient excuse.
It was a bit of a convenient excuse. I had been looking for a number of years for something I could do other than law. Unfortunately, I didn't believe I was prepared to do anything else. I really didn't have any experience doing anything else. I'm not mechanical at all. I didn't even drive a car for 20 years. And so I was looking for something that I could do, and we had bought a home, a lake home, in Hayward, and we had renovated it, and it was in the fall, and we were in town at the fall festival, the annual fall festival. It was 2004. John Kerry was running for president. I remember there was a stand for him outside the shop two doors down, and there was this ice cream shop. We hadn't been there, and we went in, and I described this in the prologue of the book. I have a cup of Blue Moon ice cream, not knowing what it is, and I've never had it before, and not realizing that you really shouldn't be eating it if you're more than six, older than six. Our friends noticed that there was a for sale sign in the window, and he was interested in real estate, so he went in and asked about it. And Dean and I looked at each other and we said, well, if it's not more than that, we'll consider it. Just having no idea, but we liked the idea of the ice cream shop. It had this real kitsch sign, neon sign. It had a retro feel, and it was very popular. There were a lot of people there. It was a beautiful day. Sure enough, it came back, and it was just a bit under this point that we described. And then we went back, and before we could leave, the owner was chasing us down the street. And we had convinced ourselves that this was the key, that our happiness would be in ice cream.
Well, and life in Hayward, probably not very much like life in London for you in the years leading up to...
It's not exactly the same. I'm trying to think of a similarity. No, there aren't really.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you do not have a dairy science background, and you said you were not a mechanical person, but you did go through some ice cream making education even before you moved. What was that experience like?
Well, of course, I did like ice cream, and I thought I was a bit of a connoisseur, from when I was eight. But when we moved back to London and we convinced ourselves that this is what we had to do, and we put our house on the market, and we thought about how we were going to leave our jobs, I noticed that there was this ice cream school. It was at the University of Reading outside of London. And there are programs like this in America. Even Madison, I think, has one of these. But this was a three-day course, which would teach you all you need to know about making ice cream. And so I did this, and I hadn't even resigned from the bank yet. And I went to Reading, and I started this course, and there was a mixture of farmers and small ice cream shop people and some people from the huge conglomerates, Unilever. And by this point, we had already decided to buy the ice cream shop. And the course talked about the physics of ice cream. And at first, I was a bit overwhelmed because science wasn't really my thing either. And they talked about freezing point depression and the delicate balance between sugars and fat. And while overwhelmed, I realized that ice cream was a key. It was basically, and it's an argument that I make in the book of life is ice cream. Because if you think about it, ice cream is one of the few food groups where you actually have stabilizers. Stabilizers is something, you know, you can talk about friends, family, and support. And it actually requires this delicate balance, which I compare to the balance of work and pleasure. And I came to the conclusion that that was the problem, that our lives have become out of balance. That was all work, all stress, all pressure, and very little pleasure. And so I came to the conclusion that ice cream was the answer.
This is not a part of the country or even a part of Wisconsin, actually, that you were unfamiliar with. You had some experience with that part of the world, but I gather it is also not necessarily someplace you imagined yourself living when you were younger?
No. From a very early age, I wanted to see the world. I like Minnesota, apart from the horrible mosquitoes and horrible winters. But as soon as I finished high school, I moved. I went to school in Chicago, New York. I did a graduate degree in international relations in Italy and Washington. And I was looking for something, a career that would give me the opportunity to travel and wear nice clothes. And I came to the conclusion that law was the answer. And unfortunately, I didn't give much thought to actually what being a lawyer would be like. And so I'd always imagined myself living abroad, and that's what I was able to do. I lived in London for 12 years, apart from 2 years in Hong Kong, before moving to Hayward.
So you decided to buy this ice cream and dairy operation. West's has been an institution in Hayward for a long time. Did you find yourself having to assuage fears by the longtime customers that things were going to change?
I was a bit concerned. We kept the ice cream exactly the same. We didn't change anything. And the former owner, Bruce West, was gracious enough to stay on and help. In fact, I'm not sure he really wanted to sell it. I think it may have been his wife's idea. But he was gladly came, and he still does help make ice cream. What we did do is we changed the premises immediately, and I was somewhat concerned, but overall the initial reaction was very positive. We kept the ice cream the same, but we gave them some nice leather chairs that they could sit in, and they were very happy.
Your purchase of West's came with a lot of equipment. It also came with a fixture that not all ice cream shops have, a guy named Buck. How did his presence affect your first years in owning West's?
Well, I knew from the first day that it was going to be not what I expected and going to be very interesting. And just to briefly describe, we came to Hayward in March 2005, and the idea was we're going to meet with the owner to talk about a handover. And so I had all these questions about the business and how its operations work. And we went into the shop, and of course, this is March, so there's a foot of snow on the ground, and there's no one around. And we can't even find someone working in the shop. But sure enough, there was a door to an office, and we opened it, and there was this blazing heater. And Bruce West, the owner, was sitting there. And then there was a man sitting there, an elderly man named Buck. And we were introduced to Buck, and we weren't sure what Buck had a role, because what he was doing was watching The Price is Right. And then he had a friend come, and that was little Bob, and they were watching The Price is Right. And we still didn't know what they were doing there, but then the owner left, and Buck stayed, and we realized that he worked there as well. And in the end, the ice cream shop came with a 76-year-old man, and he turned out to be quite a good friend, and he is quite a character, a bit cantankerous at time, but he is a big character in the book.
And I gather, really, he turned into kind of a de facto sounding board, if you will.
He did. I knew that if I could persuade Buck to like something, then most everyone in the world would like it.
So let me ask a strange question. Is the guy who owns the dairy and ice cream shop a celebrity in a place like Hayward, Wisconsin?
I wouldn't say celebrity, but everyone does know who you are, and from very, very early on, I mean the first days we were there, not only did they know who we are, but they had plenty of stories about us that weren't necessarily true. There was the rumor that we were putting in a Starbucks, and what they thought there was a bit misleading, because they'd heard we had bought the ice cream shop, but then they also heard we bought this Victorian mansion, and they couldn't believe that we were doing both things.
Could you believe that you were doing both things?
No, that wasn't. I personally couldn't believe it, because the bed and breakfast was a bit of an afterthought, as I described. We were looking for a house closer than 20 miles to town, and it had been on the market for a long time, and when we saw it, though, it seemed to also have our name on it.
how do you view that lack of anonymity when you have a job like this in a place like that? You can't be just the guy that owns the ice cream store. You are the guy that owns the ice cream store.
I've grown to like it. And I actually driving down today from Hayward, which is only 300 miles away, there was this radio program which talked about how with our environment, the way we work these days, we tend not to deal with people directly as much as we used to. And one of the nice things about being in a small town is that the people you know, when you go to the bank, you know all of the tellers and you know the manager. Whereas when I would go to my NatWest branch in London, I had no idea who they were. Or if you go to the post office, you know everyone in the post office, and they'll ask you how you're doing. And in the end, it becomes nice. It's sort of like the water cooler effect that you would have in a large office.
At the same time, you describe the downfall of that. You describe the run-in you had with a customer who was upset because you did not offer her baby-sized cones for her kids. And you can't have one of those run-ins without instantly the whole town knowing about it.
I do watch myself. And the example of the customer is, it was a lesson, and I learned that the customer is usually right.
It quickly became the stuff of legend, though, as I recall.
It was because what happened was I don't know if they have them here. Oh, they do have a kitty scoop. Okay. I made the business decision that I was not going to have kids' cones because 50% of my customers were kids. And so I figure I could make more money if I charged them a regular price. But if people asked for them, I did give them a children's cone. And unfortunately, this customer with a number of children did not ask for that, but she heard someone else ask, and she wasn't happy. And in the end, there was a bit of an altercation, and I asked her to leave.
And she may have been pregnant, does
she? She may have been pregnant. and apparently, she went to a restaurant and was telling the owner about this horrible new owner of the ice cream shop who kicked her out of the ice cream shop because I wouldn't let her use the toilet. And then it came back to me when I was at another restaurant. I only did it the once.
So we talked about your brief formal education in ice cream making when you were about to buy West's. 10 years later, how do you take on things like developing new flavors today? Do you feel like you have a feel for it?
I do have a feel. I see some wonderful flavors here that look very interesting, and I'm often inspired by other ice cream shops. No, actually, in the winter is what I do. I in the past, I would come up with new flavors. And, for example, I'm inspired by cakes and cookies. And something I described in my book, I'm often thinking back to my childhood, some of the things I like Coconut Magic Bar. I loved the 7-layer Magic Bar when I was a kid. It was my favorite. I would have it instead of birthday cake. So I soon developed an ice cream, Coconut Magic Bar, which is a vanilla dulce de leche ice cream with graham cracker, chocolate, butterscotch chips, walnuts, and it's one of my favorites, and it's also very popular. But at this same potluck dinner, they had lemon bars, and so we also have a church basement lemon bar ice cream. Sometimes my flavors are not so good.
I was going to ask, what has gone wrong for
well,
you?
Well, you know, I like, you know, the when I come to a big city and they have ice cream, and a few years ago you may remember the spicy hot chocolate, the sort of cayenne pepper chocolate ice cream. And so I tried that, and it wasn't very popular, but it could have been what I called it, which was cold sweat. But a really good one was 2 years ago in 2012. It was the 40th anniversary of the break-in of Watergate. And so I made an ice cream called Remembering Watergate, which was based on the, I don't know if you had it in Wisconsin, but in Minnesota, the Watergate salad was very popular. It was pistachio, pineapple, and marshmallow. And I did a pistachio pineapple ice cream with a marshmallow swirl. It was sickly sweet, but people still ask for it, even though we don't make it anymore.
How do you think your view of Hayward might have been different if you had written this book a year or two after you bought the dairy rather than after the better part of a decade?
Well, I actually started writing it probably. Yes. It's something I did in the very long winters. And earlier versions may not have been, often people describe the book as quite endearing and charming, and someone even said it was a love letter to Hayward, which earlier versions probably weren't like that. With time, I've grown accustomed to my town and my new home, and and it's growing on me, and that show came through in later versions.
There is maybe, I don't know, this quintessential American stereotype of the small town person, but I wonder if one of the lessons of this book is that that stereotype doesn't really hold true anymore.
I think it is. I mean, Hayward is somewhat unique as a resort town. It does have a number of visitors from large cities and from other parts of the country, and a lot of people have moved to Hayward like ourselves to work in this resort town. There is a strong Chicago connection, Southern Wisconsin connection, and now a Twin Cities connection. But even the people who've grown and lived there all their lives, people are just, I think, different now than stereotypes from many, many years ago. But I try to keep those stereotypes alive.
You describe early in the book, you know, your initial your first couple of days when you actually had to drive the milk truck, or you had to be out there doing deliveries and making sure that the guy whose job it was never took any vacations for the rest of his life, so that you wouldn't have to do that. But how 24/7 is this job for you today? You're here, obviously.
I am here. I rely on a lot of help, and over the years, I rely on more help. But in the summer, it is a very long day. I do make breakfast at McCormick House, so I'm up very early, feeding and walking the dogs, and then preparing breakfast for 4 or 5 hours. I then go to the ice cream shop, which magically opens by itself with the help of some 17-year-olds, and I make sure everything is looking all right, and often does not look like this, I'm afraid. I do some ordering, and we do some deliveries, and then I go back to welcome guests, and then at 10:30, 11 o'clock, I go close the ice cream shop. So the summer can be a very long day, and it is 7 days a week. But on the flip side, I have a semi-retired winter where we close the ice cream shop, and I tend to have only a few guests, like some in the audience, who come up to ski on weekends.
It must be something to be in a position where, you know, between the bed and breakfast and the ice cream shop, you actually really play a role in what people's vacations are like.
It's very satisfying. And I think a great thing about ice cream, and I'm sure Steve and Lauren share this, is that it is fun. It's not like selling car batteries at all. People generally have a very good experience. And at the bed and breakfast, it is, I mean, if people complained and weren't happy, it would be a very different experience from people who are, you know, generally happy and enjoy their stay.
It strikes me that car battery might be a good flavor, though.
Car battery, yeah.
We call it Die Hard.
Yeah. We made a flavor recently. Well, I didn't make it, but when they were making a toffee treat or something, and they ran out of toffee, and so in a state of emergency, they threw in whatever they could, and it's called Man-Made Disaster.
Jeff Miller, it has been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Jeff Miller is the owner of West's Hayward Dairy and also McCormick House Bed and Breakfast in Hayward, Wisconsin. His new book is called Scoop, Notes from a Small Ice Cream Shop. Our interview was recorded at Purple Door Ice Cream in Milwaukee at an event organized by Boswell Book Company. One last break, and then an international expert on opera singer Maria Callas shares insights into why she remains so compelling 37 years after her death. This is Lake Effect on WUWM.